Coming up, President Trump's latest mission, oust Kansas City Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver. But how? We have more on the White House push to close down the USDA and ship thousands of jobs to Kansas City. 2 years from today, we'll be swearing in a new Kansas City mayor. This week, the first candidate steps forward. And it's a week of tragedy as the community mourns a sheriff's deputy killed in the line of duty. And Kansas City makes national news in a fatal collapse of a Family Dollar store. And now we know the streetcar extension opening date. Now get ready for some big changes and tickets and fines. Those stories and the rest of the week's news straight ahead.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome. I'm Nick Haynes. Glad to have you with us on our weekly journey through the Metro's most impactful, confusing, and downright head-scratching local news stories. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week from the primetime anchor desk at KNBC 9 News, Chris Ketz.
This is my first time on the news set. Love what you've done with the place.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Makes a huge difference. Former star reporter and editorial writer Dave Helling is with us from KCY News. Local government reporter Savannah Hawley Bates. And at the helm of our Metro's newest newspaper, Next Page KC, Eric Wesson. Now, this week, Donald Trump has a new mission to oust Emmanuel Cleaver. The president is urging Missouri Republicans to redraw the state's political maps to squeeze out Kansas City's Democratic congressman. It's part of a newly outlined strategy to keep control of Congress in 2026. Among the tactics being considered is the calling of a special Missouri legislative session to rewrite the boundaries of the state's congressional districts. How seriously, though, should we take this latest push by the president, Savannah?
I think very seriously. He clearly wields a lot of influence. Down in Texas, Governor Abbott wasn't super keen on the idea, and then reportedly after a call from the president, called the session, and now they have a new map unveiled. So it's sort of the same tactic here in Missouri. Although I will say Missouri lawmakers did try this before, and it failed because they don't want to create what could be new contested districts. And it's kind of up to Kehoe to see if he wants to stake his political career on this.
So what is the appetite of Governor Mike Kehoe, also a Republican, to say, let's bring lawmakers back for a special session?
We don't know for sure. The leadership of the legislature in both houses seems skeptical about this idea, in part because of the problems with creating problematic districts in the rest of the state, in part because it's just one seat, in part because it's occupied by a black man, and that raises all sorts of legal concerns if they gerrymander too much. So it's a very, very difficult thing for not a great return. In Texas, 5 seats might be at stake. In California, if the Democrats do it, 9 seats. 1 seat you don't think would make that much of a difference. So the odds are probably more likely that they won't pursue this, but it's not zero because Donald Trump is in
there. So how would this actually work, though, Eric? You're just trying to find as many, cobble together as many communities that have a lot more Republican voters close to Kansas City and push them into that district that Cleaver represents?
Yes. That would be the ultimate goal if they were to do it that way. But, you know, generally speaking, I think Representative Cleaver brings a lot of money to Kansas City. I think people on both sides of the aisle like him as a person. Now, whether they would succumb to President Trump's wishes and wants, but I think he's pretty safe in being in that seat.
Now, these kinds of efforts, though, can backfire. Isn't it true on the Kansas side, they tried to squeeze out Charisse Davids?
They tried to take half the county away from her, and it still didn't work.
And she still won by a huge amount.
She still won by a big number. I think, you know, my sense, the leadership and the legislature, their reaction is lukewarm at best. And I think the fascinating question here is, how can Governor Mike Kehoe, how can a Republican-dominated legislature say no to this president? And if you do, what's the cost on the backside?
And apparently the White House was calling individual lawmakers. This is not just an academic, philosophical conversation.
There are already calls in Congress for an investigation.
I think a couple of things. First, it shows how much Trump believes the 2026 shows my age, 2026 elections will make a difference. If the Democrats take the House, it'll be 2 years of investigations and potential impeachment motions, that type of thing. So that's problematic. The other thing to keep in mind, Nick, is Missouri is already a 6-2 state.
Right.
And the state is actually 45% Democratic, roughly, maybe a little less, to 55% Republican. So the seats are already skewed to the Republican Party in the state of Missouri. To make it a 7-1 state really sticks out like a sore thumb, and again suggests some sort of legal intervention is possible.
And you know, the last election, the presidential election, Representative Cleaver won it by 60% of the vote. And that means that he had Republicans voting for him. And when you look at places like Marshall, Missouri, and those places, they support him. One thing that I know is several years ago, there was an issue with the highway and the kids getting across the highway to get on the bus. He had a walkway built over the freeway for them to cross over to catch their school buses. And they've been in love with him ever since then.
Well, but Cleaver is feeling also pressure from his own party this week, as not one but two Democratic candidates file against him, including activist and social media personality Hartzell Gray. We're accustomed to Cleaver facing mainly token Republican challengers. Isn't this a new and different challenge for Cleaver, Savannah?
It's somewhat new, certainly different. He has faced about six challengers in the primary since he was first ran for the office in 2004. But like Eric said, he's been popular ever since in the vote, and he's defeated every primary challenger, especially as recently as 2022. This is sort of new in the fact that he has two challengers, Jordan Herrera and Hartzell Gray, and Hartzell Gray is a well-known name around Kansas City, so, you know, time will tell.
You, though, were looking dismissive at it. Say, oh, you don't believe that poses any danger. He is 80 years old now.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Those two names don't have the same political clout that he has. I don't think that it's going to be much of a challenge.
I think Eric's right in this particular case, but the idea that 80-year-old members of Congress, 80 and older, are facing some pressure from younger people is very real, not just here but across the country. And if there is one chief Democratic criticism of the national legislature, it's that it's so old and that it's run by old people and that the chairman and women of the committees are so old. And so this is a sign that Cleaver's membership in the House is going to face some pressure going forward.
And a sign that progressives all over the country are going to be stepping up and challenging situations like this. I think in this particular situation, though, if you're the Rev, you're probably more concerned about the possibility of redistricting than the opponents that he potentially could.
Lots of other stories happening on our Week in Review. We're still waiting to hear more details this week about a new Trump plan to move thousands of federal Agriculture Department jobs to Kansas City. It's part of a new push by the White House to shift government offices closer to the people they serve. The USDA employs close to 100,000 people around the country. How many of those jobs could be heading to Kansas City, Dave?
Well, it's not completely clear yet. 5,000-6,000 maybe. This was tried before, Nick, as you know.
Yes.
In the first Trump term, I think, in my recollection.
Yeah, that's right.
The first Trump term. And it failed largely, or it didn't fail, but it did not achieve its goals in part because people didn't want to move here from Washington. They had families, kids in school, kids in sports, that type of thing. It isn't clear why this time will be different. It's more than Kansas City, of course, in this proposal. It's several different cities across the country, but it isn't clear that it will be a huge boon.
How come, though, we're not hearing any sort of celebratory announcements from Mayor Quinton Lucas saying, thank you, President Trump, for the thousands of jobs you want to bring to Kansas City?
Well, these aren't new jobs. These are moving jobs from D.C. to different field offices in Kansas City and other places around the country. There's one in Colorado. And again, it didn't really work last time. Many people just quit. And, you know, that's maybe also part of the motivation to move these jobs is to continue to reduce the workforce. The USDA has already lost 15,000 jobs under their restructuring and offering people those retirement bonuses, that fork in the road. And so I think people are inherently skeptical about any new federal jobs coming under this Trump administration, especially what the motives are.
Yeah, and didn't they do this with over in Kansas, and then Dolge came in and eliminated all of those jobs? So you pack up your family, you move here for how long? 6 weeks, 6 months, maybe. And I think one of the things is it's so unclear as to what's going to happen as to why Mayor Quentin Lucas is not really excited about it.
Well, funeral services are this week for a Wyandotte County Sheriff's deputy killed while responding to a domestic incident call. Elijah Ming was a 9-year veteran of the department. He was 34 years old. Now, just like any death is tragic and painful, but what, Chris, when it's a member of the law enforcement community, it gets an awful lot of more media attention. What catapulted the story to the front page and the top of every local newscast?
I think part of it was the fact that this was a death that involved a domestic violence case, for one. This was a situation where a woman in a part of town living in a house was looking to move out and perhaps getting away from a partner. She called for help, and that help arrived in the form of Deputy Ming and a Kansas City, Kansas police officer. The man inside obviously saw what was going on and opened fire at an individual with a fairly long criminal history. So I think the circumstances there probably resonate with an awful lot of people.
And I think to add to that, he was a nice guy.
Yes.
And everybody in the community knew him, respected him, and I think people were really shocked that it actually happened.
Very strong ties.
Yeah, he had really. Yeah, he really did. And I knew him from like covering several stories that he was involved in. He was a nice guy. He really was a sincerely nice guy.
Now, Kansas City also hitting the headlines, the national headlines, in fact, this week amid another fatal tragedy. One person died and another suffered severe injuries after a Family Dollar store collapsed in Kansas City. It happened at 37th and Broadway. What's even more interesting about the story is that there were media reports that multiple complaints had been filed with the city codes enforcement department complaining the building was not safe, was tilting dangerously to one side. But is that just speculation, Savannah, anecdotal reports, or did people really file those complaints officially?
Well, a city inspector did visit the building just days before it collapsed and reported that they did notice some issues with the building. They didn't, the Family Dollar did not replace the structural beam that had been knocked down in a car crash 9 years ago. Okay. And so these issues have been persistent, but no action was taken after that city inspector came out. And multiple neighborhood community members continued to complain about it, not always with the city, though, sometimes with the Community Improvement District, which did not report it to the city.
Now, weren't we supposed to be getting tough on these building codes? Cast your mind back 4 years ago this very month when nearly 100 people died when a condo building shockingly collapsed in the Miami suburb of Surfside. Remember that? It was a huge story. Mayor Quentin Lucas was heavily quoted in a New York Times story about the need for cities to now engage in more intense inspections of older buildings, and he would be demanding new rules, he said, and code enforcement in Kansas City.
What we've seen recently in Miami, when you look at pictures of a building where there was rebar exposed, where there were concrete issues, it gives me cause for concern. I think it gives much of the rest of City Council cause for concern. I think all options are on the table to make sure that we keep people safe. And if we're seeing a failure in building codes in one part of the country, I think it's a sign that maybe there's more work we can do.
Did that ever happen then, Chris?
If you look at this particular case, the answer is no, because this is a property that people have been complaining about, as we've said, for an awfully long time. Nothing's been done about it. A city inspector there 2 days before saw the problem that people were seeing. And I think the question here, ultimately, after a city inspector, a city inspector saw what was happening 2 days before the collapse, why wasn't something done then? Sure. What did the city know and when is would be my question, and the answers will be very interesting.
In that New York Times article I referenced with Quinta Lucas heavily quoted in it, there was another line that it said, it's fair to say that code compliance and structural engineering rarely gets voters animated in the same way as crime or even street repaving. We have this sort of view that we've got all these inspectors running around town looking at restaurants, before look for problems, looking for these buildings that have problems, but that really isn't the case.
We do not. And people just assume that buildings are routinely inspected, not just for structural integrity, but fire and whether fire escapes are blocked or whatever. That, inspections and code compliance are extraordinarily labor-intensive occupations. You can't just drive by and go, oh, look, that brick is out of place. You have to do some real work, and it takes real people. And with the pressure to reduce city staff and reduce code compliance efforts, it isn't a surprise that things like this happened, although, to be clear, the fact that complaints were filed should have raised red flags somewhere.
But ultimately,
and did not.
Okay, but did you see the press release that the city put out, and it had this line? It said, ultimately, the responsibility for the structural integrity and safety of a building, quote, lies with its property owner and manager.
That's what they do. And if you go down to court and you look at people with tickets for their gutters hanging off their houses, their yards not being cut properly, you would think that they were on top of it. But if you were driving down Broadway, you could visibly see that building leaning. And that was no accident. And if they went in there a few days before that and did an inspection and saw that, and then we have this collapse, that's on the city.
Kansas City Mayor Quinton Lucas is marking a milestone this week. Today, he hits the midpoint of his final term. 2 years from today, Kansas City will be swearing in a new mayor. And the first candidate is about to make their big campaign announcement. City Councilwoman and Mayor Pro Tem Raina Park Shaw says she will make it official at a campaign kickoff and fundraising event on August 16th. Does that mean she's by default the front runner to be the next mayor of Kansas City, Eric?
No. And I think this is her second or third announcement. I think this is, really, I think I've written about it and I've seen it before. I think this is her formal fundraiser that's coming up. It's not really her first announcement of it. But no, it doesn't have her as a front runner.
You know, I remember when Quinton Lucas first ran, when Sly James, you know, was term limited out, there were 11 candidates running for the job. In fact, when we were putting on a debate, we couldn't find enough podiums to make it all work. Are we going to see that sort of level of interest now that Quinton Lucas is term limited and will be on his way out?
I don't think it'll be as hyper-competitive as it was when Lucas first won his mayoral seat, but... Raina Park Shaw is certainly not the only council person who will be running for mayor. She might be the first to publicly announce. She might be the most public candidate so far, but there will be more. And developers have also been talking about running their own sort of outside candidate for this role as well, so it certainly will be competitive.
It's going to be an interesting race, and Quinton Lucas may play a role. He may have pick a favorite or a couple of favorites. And
that doesn't always work out, like Sly James did with Joel E. Justice.
With Joel E. Justice, it doesn't work out, so... We'll see how it develops going forward. One of the reasons for the early announcements is fundraising and money. It takes a lot of money to run for mayor in Kansas City, not so much council offices, but for mayor. And so everyone involved is going to try and start the phones ringing as quickly as possible.
And it's going to be interesting because a lot of the council members are terming out, but there are some other council members that are taking other seats. You have Crispin Rea, he's going to be running. And one of the... city council people from up north is even going to resign their seat and go run for a state office as well. So it's going to be interesting. You might have an overwhelming majority of the council will all be new once this smoke clears on this thing.
After more than 3 years of traffic snarls and torn-up roads, Kansas City's new streetcar extension is ready to roll. The new 3.5-mile route down to the Country Club Plaza and UMKC will officially open on Friday, October 24th. This week, though, city leaders joined streetcar officials along the Main Street extension to detail how its new transit-only lanes will work. Unlike on the existing route, streetcars will run in designated lanes prohibited to other traffic. The city is expected to announce stepped-up enforcement and fines for violators. Now, are we asking for trouble here, Chris? As we've been so accustomed to be able to ride and drive along those tracks, and now somehow now we're not supposed to do that, and they are talking about fines for this.
Yeah, there's going to have to be an education process here, an educational element to this, because, listen, I can see the stories happening right now of people who get caught driving in those transit-only lanes and picking up a $50 ticket and being upset about it and calling their favorite television station saying, what the heck's going on here? You know that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think also the part of the streetcar-only lanes is not only just to prioritize the streetcar, but it's also to calm the roads down in Midtown and towards the plaza. You know, in the downtown portion where people can already drive on the streetcar tracks, the roads are more narrow there, so they can't have a transit-only lane. But applying a transit-only lane on the new extension or parts of it allows them to sort of make the street narrower, make driving a little harder so people can't drive highway speeds down Main Street. Of course, people won't like that, but I think what's new here is also the city's declared intent to enforce this. People park in the streetcar lane all the time downtown. People drive, you know, stop right in front of the streetcar. If the city really does enforce this, I think it could change sort of the thinking around it.
It'd be interesting to see what the business owners along Main have to say about all of this too, because if their traffic drops dramatically and all they can do is watch the streetcar whiz by a couple times a day, they may be frustrated. At the same time, how'd you like to be on Broadway? I mean, the traffic that's going to shift in that direction will be immense and potentially cost.
And as we're just off Main Street, this is your official warning, guests, that you're going to have struggle in future to ever find a parking space here at the station, because everyone who's at those downtown garages is going to be parking in our lot here to save themselves the money of the downtown parking garages.
Potential revenue source, perhaps?
Okay.
I can't wait to take the streetcar to the show.
Okay. All right. That's a good way of looking at it. Something else from the history books this week marks the 60th anniversary of Medicare and Medicaid, the nation's signature health programs that support seniors and low-income Americans. It has a big local tie-in. President Lyndon B. Johnson would fly into Kansas City this week to sign the two programs into law at the Truman Presidential Library in Independence. By the way, the museum had lots of free ice cream and cupcakes this week to mark the milestone, but healthcare groups say this is not a moment to celebrate, pointing out the millions of Americans now losing Medicaid coverage as part of a package of sweeping budget cuts in Washington. But what is the impact so far, if any, in Kansas or Missouri, or has it not played out the way Trump's biggest critics forecast?
You know, I think In Missouri and Kansas, tens of thousands of people might lose their coverage. And so it is sort of a bittersweet recognition that, all these decades ago, it did kind of start in Kansas City or in Independence, and Harry Truman got the first Medicare card.
That's right.
But at the same time, on that anniversary, tens of thousands of people who would have been his constituents aren't going to have health care.
You should remember that the Medicaid work requirements that are part of the Trump bill don't take effect until next year, I think, after the election, 27. So after the congressional election, and so the immediate impact is less. Although, if you run a rural hospital in Missouri or Kansas, particularly in Kansas, which hasn't expanded Medicaid, you remain nervous about the cash flowing in and out of the bank in your behalf. So that's an issue. But just a personal reference, I remember when Lyndon Johnson came to Kansas City. I lived here. I was 10 years old.
Did you cover that?
I did not. I was a little young to write for the paper at 10. But I remember listening to it on the radio. There was a day when radio stations had news departments, which they don't anymore, and they actually covered it. So it was quite an event. Truman got the first Medicare card. He was Medicare recipient number one. Yeah. So it's an anniversary worth remembering. Medicare, and I say this as now someone who gets Medicare, is a pretty important
By the way, next week, Dave Helling will tell us about his coverage of Abraham Lincoln's inauguration, which he was also at. We'll get to that story next week. Now, when you put a program like this together every week, you can't get every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed? If you want to save a few dollars, this weekend is Missouri's back-to-school sales tax holiday. No state sales tax on everything from clothes, computers to school supplies through midnight Sunday. It had dogs and beer, so what could have gone so terribly wrong? Bar K abruptly closes, apparently inflation, problems hiring staff, and yes, relentless construction along the riverfront just too much for the canine-friendly attraction. The state of Kansas wipes out all diversity and inclusion programs starting today. It's no longer just ending gender pronouns on college campuses, but the state went through 20,000 job titles across all state agencies to eliminate any positions that reference DEI. Early voting continues in Wyandotte County to pick the next mayor. Election day is Tuesday. And a little fisticuffs as the Chiefs wrap up training camp in St. Joe. The team's first preseason game is next Saturday. All righty, Chris Katz, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different?
I did. The Bar K story down on the riverfront I found was interesting. And some of the talk around town points to maybe the people behind it expanded too fast, keeping staff became a challenge, dogs not getting along, you add alcohol to that, and, gee, what's wrong with that picture?
Eric.
I picked something different. The report on congestion with Kansas City highways and freeways. Evidently, they didn't drive on I-70 going east and west during the rush hour or 71 highway anytime, because those are the most congested places that I know of anywhere in the country.
Savannah.
You know, I think it is KCATA's new leaning benches for me. There was a lot of outcry when they posted this online about how people wanted someplace to sit instead of someplace to just sort of lean back against. And, you know, they are installed downtown in some of the busiest bus stops, and only time will tell if people accept them or if KCATA has to get rid of them.
Was that really just to try and prevent the homeless?
There are, you know, it's not explicit, but the reason the benches were removed in the first place at these stops were because business owners and the police requested that KCATA remove them. So it's certainly hostile architecture.
Dave.
Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri is involved in a tiff with the President of the United States, of all people. In fact, on Wednesday, President Trump called Hawley a second-tier senator, in part because Hawley has pushed for this bill that would prohibit members of Congress and, at least at one point, the president from owning individual stocks. When you couple that with his idea of a rebate for people from tariffs, he's staking out some interesting territory for a guy who was a pretty solid Trump supporter up until now.
You must think that was a good lane for the presidency.
Could be. I mean, that may be exactly what's going on, that the fist raised in the air photograph needs to be balanced with something else. And so he's taken some real populist positions recently, and he's just being a more interesting senator than he was maybe a year ago.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KCUR's Savannah Hawley-Bates, and from KNBC 9 News, Chris Katz, the best dressed man in Kansas City media, Eric Wesson, from Next Page KC, and news icon Dave Helling. Now, you may have heard we just had all our federal funding cut around here, so we're sticking our hands in between the cushions of the sofa in search of loose coins. For the next couple of weeks, we will be hitting the pause button on Week in Review to make room for our summer membership drive. As our truckers like to say, we'll see you on the flip side. From all of us here at Kansas City PBS, be well, keep calm, and carry on.